real one.
Change is coming. Isn't that the song? I'm not a happy camper. No, does it bother me? Yes. Everything bothers me. You know that? Boot up. Boot up. Boot up.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Boot Up, the LSU Basketball Podcast. I am Cody Worsham, joined today by Harrison Valentine. Harrison's a little under the weather, so we're going to see if we can get through this episode by obeying rule number two, which is no coughing.
Not feeling my best, but...
You sound terrible.
The general would want me to suck it up and stay in the fight.
You sound awful. You look worse than you sound.
And so I will.
Okay. Suck it up. No excuses. Play like a champion. It's rule number four. All right. We got a lot to get to today. There's been three games since last we met. Kent has blessed us with a dispatch, which I will...
Is it just one dispatch, or are we getting a triple dose?
So we promised... a double dispatch last time. Today it's going to be a triple dispatch. And we're going to get to that in a second. We got a lot of sound bites here. I'm juggling a lot today. As we've tried to record this intro like four times. I've got a lot of sound bites in the air that I'm trying to get to. But what I'm excited about is at the end of this, after me and Harrison finished talking, we're going to play an interview with Darius Days, aka Barius Trays, aka maybe the hottest basketball player in the country right now in terms of his play, not his appearance. That would be a weird thing for me to say. So, but he's playing fantastic basketball right now. And I sat down with him before the season. You saw some of that interview on the Gold Standard this week. Did you watch the episode this week, Harrison?
I watched like half of it.
Oh, Harrison, come on, man. Like you look terrible, you sound worse, and you're not even doing your homework. Like what are we doing here? Step it up, son.
It's my bad.
Okay. I expect a better performance. Like Will Wade's teams in the first three games of the season.
They start slow and fast.
You're not off to a great start, but we'll have a soundbite of that to come. Look, this is what we want to do before we get to the day's interview. We're going to try to recap these last three games, obviously starting with Kent's dispatch. And we have some general trends that we want to get to. Shout out to the General Wade. In honor of General Wade, we want to get to some general trends. So I guess, do we need to start with the dispatch? Is there anything else we need to do before we get there?
I don't think so.
Okay, let's make sure again, juggling lots of balls here. Let me get the music queued up. And let's play Kent's dispatch. Coming, I promise.
I'm not sure if the saying is offense leads to defense or defense leads to offense, but I think we've seen in these first four games it's a little of both. You have to score to be able to get into the press, but once you get into the press, LSU has been able to make steals that lead to easy transition buckets. And it really caused havoc on the defensive end in the first four games. Great effort against McNeese, Tari Eason, 3 out of 4 double-doubles, Darius Days, his 17th career double-double, which leads the SEC. Got a big game coming up Monday night. You just can't stress how good Belmont is. In the last 10 years, they've only won under 22 games once, and that year they won 20. There are a lot of 26 wins, 25 wins on their roster for the last 10 years. They've beaten multiple Power 5 teams. This is going to be a huge test for LSU coming into the first road trip to Niceville, Florida for the Emerald Coast Classic. Another great crowd, 4-0 on the year. It's a great start, but you can really top off this great start by winning on Monday night. I think it's going to be a great game. We're going to need another crowd to help this team along and push them over the finish line, and hopefully the Tigers will go to Niceville undefeated at 5-0. But like I say, it's going to be a real test on Monday night. Back to you guys.
Was that just one dispatch? Yeah, one of Kent's longer dispatches. Let me fade the music out here.
So we have two more?
No, that was three dispatches in one, as Kent recapped. Three victories for LSU. That would be UL Monroe 101-39 on November 9th, then Texas State 84-59 on November 12th. Sorry, we touched on the ULM one already. That was Texas State, Liberty, and then McNeese last night. So Kent gave us the three recaps there.
By the way, before we...
A little lengthy there. He's at 2 minutes.
Before we get into the trends and everything.
I think it's getting to Kent's head. That's what I think.
First two episodes, you asked me how it was booting up in person. We were both there on Monday night. First time for you of the season. So I'll reverse the roles a little bit and ask you, how was your first time being back in the PMAC?
It was great. It was great to be back this year. We're back to normal in the PMAC. No masks, no restrictions. Once you get in, it's normal basketball. So it was great. It was a good result against Liberty, a really good team. I actually left off on that game like really, really energetic. I ended up writing a story after a game, which is not something that I do as much anymore, but I was pretty excited after that game because that was a good Liberty basketball team that LSU beat. I'm trying to pull up my story right now. God, we've done a lot of basketball content. We're kind of like our basketball team content team is kind of killing it with Garrison and everybody that's doing the content stuff. I can't even find it right now. But essentially, what I wrote was about the fast and physical element to LSU's play, and I think that's, as we get into general trends, that's probably one of the ones that we would start with, is how fast and physical they are. But the overall experience, it was fantastic to be back there. The student section has been phenomenal. In fact, I would be remiss if I didn't share this. This is breaking news, Harrison. This is you're not going to find this anywhere else. This is a boot up exclusive. This is from Dave Haskin himself, the master of hats, as Will Wade would refer him to. I wish I had that soundbite queued up. But this is confirmed with our ticket office. The first three games this season has been the highest student attendance under Will Wade's tenure.
That's awesome.
We had 2,021 students against ULM, 1,558 against Texas State, 1,304 against Liberty. I don't know the numbers from last night against McNeese.
Total buy-in on the court, off the court, from everybody.
Yeah, an average of 1,627 student fans from the past three seasons. I couldn't get that out. We averaged 702 students his first season, 1,036 his second season, 1,056 the season before. So we're at 1627 now, which is double his first season and an incremental 60% more than the last season we had pre-COVID. So I'm looking at the rest that – oh, the other thing that Dave noted was the students were lined up all the way to Mike's Habitat before the doors opened against Liberty, and the first two students were there at 3 p.m. for a 6 p.m. game.
That's crazy.
So those students are following rule number one, which is always be ready to boot up. Yep. They've been ready to boot up. Are we ready to get into some general trends now?
Ready.
Okay, where are we starting with?
Defense. Do you want to start defense?
I think I do want to. Well, before we start with defense, let's start with, I'm going to call him Bothered Bill. Bothered Bill is Will Wade's alter ego. It's he's going to kill me if he hears this. Oh, my God. I'm just realizing it as I'm starting to say it. Harrison, strike one. You didn't even warn me. If you tried to warn me, I was looking at my computer and I couldn't see. That's what this red button for is the mute button. I can mute you. Bothered Bill is Will Wade's alter ego when everyone else is happy with the state of LSU basketball. Will Wade finds things to be unhappy about. Now, let me say this. It's genuine. He's not faking it. I tweeted this a couple days ago, where I love Will Wade after a win, like after a good win, because he just finds all this stuff to get bothered about. And it's a quote that I've said in a number of places lately, but he understands that winning creates as many problems as it solves. So when you win, like everyone thinks when you win, everything's great, right? Like you won and everyone's happy and morale's high and the fans are excited. And you're going to get big attendance and whatever. Like a lot of good things happen. A lot of bad things happen too. Guys' egos get inflated. Playing time becomes an issue. Like, right? Like, there's just as many problems created as solved. So,
we got our first "I'm tired of it" of the season at Wednesday's press conference.
That was at Wednesday's. Yeah. I don't have an "I'm tired of it" sound itself queued up. But let me see if I can play this sound. It's sort of a compilation. I borrowed it from the broadcast last night of it's called Will Wade is not a happy camper.
We're not starting how we need to start. The starting lineup, energy, the warm-up. I think our warm-up, we're going to change our warm-up routine. I'm not real happy with that. Our pregame meal, I don't think we're eating enough and fueling right during the day. I'm also not pleased that we're turning the ball over too much. We got to quit having these offensive fouls, the illegal screens and some of these offensive fouls. We had 5 offensive fouls the other night. Our defense hadn't started very fast either. We messed up some switches. We haven't been nearly as good as we need to be on the offensive glass. We didn't get to the weak side. We didn't get inside and opposite. Not good enough. We pick up unnecessary fouls. They know I'm not a happy camper about that stuff. We've got to be able to play beginning, middle, end.
That's the voice of a coach who was 3-0 and had just beat a Liberty team that's probably going to make the tournament. And what he called, one, you know, after the game, one of the 7 or best 8 wins that'll be on LSU's schedule when they get to the end of the season. When I saw him after the game, he was excited, man. He was fired up. He looked at me. He was like, we can guard, can't we? Like, he was excited. But then he goes home and he watches film and he sees all the little things they did wrong. And he realizes, yeah, we're not where we need to be. And so the message very quickly turns from, we can guard, can't we? And this sort of excitement to that, which, by the way, he says that with like a little bit of joy in his eyes. Mm-hmm. Were you there Wednesday? Or you were watching?
I was not.
Okay. No. So, but we both watched it.
Yeah.
How would you describe the look on his face when he like gets a question about...
It's like a sly smirk.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's like low-key excited to deliver the bad news, right? That my team is not as good as they need to be. So that's my first general trend. And what he was talking about there, right, is the first 3 games of the season, although LSU played well, and even at Nicholls, go back to the Nicholls exhibition, LSU got off to poor starts and then finished game strong. He's not happy about that. Now, McNeese last night...
Even last night, the first half will prove to be... The score will prove to be inconsequential.
43-16, right?
But I'm sure, you know, Coach would be the first one to tell you that last night wasn't the start that he was looking for either. And he'll have lots of material to harp on this week.
So I wasn't watching live. I was at a Thanksgiving dinner with family like a week early because I have like 6 Thanksgiving dinners that I have to go to over the next week. So we spaced them out. And I just pulled up the score at halftime, and it was 43-16. Yeah. And I said, well, Will Wade's message about...
A sluggish start offensively. Defense was forced a ton of turnovers, bunch of steals, but offense took a little time to get into a mojo.
Yeah, so I tweeted basically like 43-16, though I guess Will Wade's message got through, and the first few responses were, well, the first 12 minutes weren't great, or the first 8 minutes weren't great, or whatever. And so I went back and watched them, and like defensively, they were very good. Offensively... inconsistent, which takes us, I guess, let's just take that into our general themes, right? That's as good a representation of the general themes.
Yeah.
Let's start with the defensive side. This team defensively is superb. Mm-hmm. And we'll see as the competition gets better. We'll see as they step up a weight class. But through 4 games, you could not ask much more of LSU's defense.
I have in my notes here, they forced 4 turnovers in the first 2 minutes, 8 turnovers in the first 5 minutes, 27 total. Even when things, you know, weren't cooking offensively early, the Tigers were still able to get those possessions back, and that led to the, what is it, like a 19-0 run that they had.
Yeah.
And they never looked back. And 4th straight game, they've held the opponent under 60, so you gotta love it.
I'm gonna give you some homework. You don't have to do it right now. You could do it after the podcast, because it's going to be extensive.
Okay.
I want to know like the biggest runs LSU's had in each game, because they've had some big ones. Like you mentioned 19-0, they had the whatever, the 57-6 run or 57-9 run that I sorted last game. Just like the big, because this team, and we'll touch on this in a second, they have the ability to go on runs, but the key to go, and my dad, basketball coach growing up my whole life, he always said basketball is a game of 2-minute spurts. This team has some real legit 2-minute spurts. The spurt that they had was 34-16 against McNeese. And I'm trying to remember what sparked it, but basically it was their press, and we'll talk about their press in a little bit. But Ellis, it went from 34-16 to 43-16 in about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And it was steals on the press. It was Days hitting a 3. It was Days getting a layup. It was a Pinson. I don't remember the exact sequence that it was, but it was steal bucket, steal bucket, steal bucket.
Or on Monday when the general got that technical, and right after that, they went on what, like a 27-6
run to end the game.
And that was the turning point in the game.
Yeah. They have the ability to go on an incredible spurt, which is the sign of an elite team. And the reason they're able to do it right now is what they're able to do defensively. So the first Cody is a dummy of the season. Cody is a dummy because in one of our previous episodes, what was the question that I had about LSU's defense? You weren't paying attention either. Harrison's a dummy too. So this is a Cody and Harrison's a dummy. The question was, I don't know if, how many turnovers this defense is going to force. And part of that was imbued by last season when LSU was not great at forcing turnovers. In fact, I should go ahead and pull up the KenPom in one of my many tabs right here. This is LSU's defensive numbers from last season on very specific stats. Average possession length defensively, 16.8 seconds. That was pretty short. That was 78th in the country. It's pretty short. Like 78th out of 300-something teams. You're in the top fourth of the country. It's pretty short defensive possession. Here are the more obvious ones. Turnover percentage, 17.9%, 231st in the country. Not good. Block percentage, 183rd in the country, 8.2%. Not good. Steal percentage, 10.6%, 56th in the country, a little bit better. But essentially, LSU was playing pretty quick defensive possessions, which means that they're probably giving up a lot of points. They were not forcing a ton of turnovers, 231st in the country. They weren't blocking a ton of shots, 183rd in the country. And they were stealing a little bit, 56th in the country. It's not bad. Top 56 is okay. It's not great, but it's okay. Fast forward to this year. Turnover percentage, fourth in the country, 30.8%. Block percentage, seventh in the country, 22.7%. Steal percentage, second in the country, 18.7%. And average possession length, 18.3 seconds, which is ranked 303rd in the country. That means it's the 303rd slowest defensive possession. So last year was faster defensive possessions. This year, they are grinding teams out defensively, while on offense, they're 28th in the country in tempo. So they're playing super fast on offense and slowing you down on defense. And that's because of the press.
Yeah.
It's that 2-2-1 press is just eating teams alive.
Super successful.
What have you seen from LSU's press in person, watching film, hearing Will talk about it?
The press has just generated so much energy for the team. I know a lot of the press is given the most of their runs too. They'll press and they'll create turnovers that'll get the crowd into it. And the press has allowed them to kind of generate these runs and these energy spurts that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's been key to that run. Here's Will. I think this is after last night's game because he's wearing the crew neck sweater, by the way, the gray crew neck. What'd you think of that? With the Louisiana on the side?
Once I saw the Louisiana on the side, I was
it elevates it.
I was for it.
The zipper here on the bicep, on the left bicep, is interesting look. I'm not sure how much other LSU branding is on here besides the boot on the right, which I love. I had a buddy text me last night, like, I need one of those crew necks. So
Casual Will.
Casual Will. Not to be confused with Bothered Bill. Here's Casual Will on the success of LSU's press.
I want to press more. We got to press more. So we did a good job tonight. We were prepared for their press offense and got a couple turnovers, and we made them change their press offense in the course of the game. But, yeah, we need more pressing, not less. What did they turn over, 27, 28 times?
Yeah, that's tall guy.
Well, that's what it all starts. If you got two guards, you know, you got to have two pit bulls up there that can guard. You can't have poodles. You got to have guys up there that can sit down and guard, and Penson and Murray and Gaines are all like that. And then you got to have some good second line guys, and Eason's got good anticipation. And then the biggest thing is you got to have that goalie back there, and you got Efton back there in the back. But yeah, it all starts with that ball pressure out front.
I feel like they have the perfect athletes to run an effective press too. With Gaines and X, and you know, they're ball hawks. They you know, they're got, you know, crazy athleticism. It all works.
I muted my mic to clear my throat because I'm a professional. I'm like you. Also, I have the board within reach. I agree. I love the pit bulls versus poodles analogy. That's classic alliteration. Will Wade metaphor. Well done. So 10 shot clock violations on the season so far. That ties
That's
into
it. I feel like it,
unless
more.
They had more in the second half. So I hadn't finished watching the second half from last night, but at some point in the first half they got another one, and the broadcast said they're up to 10 now. I mean, so that goes into the longer possessions, right? So the press does a few things. Will's run presses before where the intent was basically just to slow the opponent down from getting their half court offense. This is a much more disruptive press. It's very attacking. And the beauty of it is you can have Pinson and Gaines at the top, or you can have Murray there. If you get past LSU's press, in the past it was like, all right, you got a layup. You get past this press, they're looking at Efton Reed.
Yeah.
And Efton's not like a Cavell Bigby Williams athletic monster necessarily, but he is...
He's a presence.
He is 90th in the country right now in block rate, which is really good, 8.6%. If he's not back there, you've got Tari Eason, who's 10.7%, 59th in the country. You've got credible rim protectors on the back end, goalies, as Will calls them. You have pit bulls at the front, whether it's Murray, whether it's Gaines, whether it's Pinson, who are just terrorizing the ball. And then you've got athletes on the second level of that press who are getting deflections, jumping passing lanes, can recover quickly. This team defensively, that press has some weapons. And then when they get in the half court, Harrison, what I love about this team is two things. One, the gaps. Like, if you're trying to drive the gaps on this team, God bless you. Good luck. I remember the very first practice that I had at Nicholls State. It was like our first full practice, right? And I transferred up from an NAIA school, was at Nicholls. At the NAIA level, I was like capable. That was my level. The Division I level was a step higher that I probably wasn't quite ready for. So my first practice, and that Nicholls team that I was on, I think it was like top 25 in the country in defense. Very, very, very good defensive team. First practice I had, I drove into a gap, and the team captain, his name's Justin Payne, he's coaching, I think at Georgia, I'll tell you in a second, he's coaching college women's basketball at a school in Georgia. He punched the ball out of my hand so hard when I drove the gap. Like, it literally took the breath out of me. Really? He literally punched into the ball, followed through, got a little of me, knocked the wind out of me, and I was like, I am at a different level, yeah. Right? This LSU basketball team, I see myself and the guards on the other team that are trying to drive these gaps, and just Monty Wilkinson just sticks a hand in there, punches it out. Eric Gaines just swats a hand in there like an angry cat and just rips it out. Brandon Murray, like a bulldog, just sticks his head in there. Like, I would hate driving the gaps on this team, and they just keep punching balls out, swatting balls out.
Super aggressive.
It's an opponent's worst nightmare to try to drive. Like, it just is. The second thing they can do besides protect the gaps, they can rotate and recover. Did you see the clip I posted on Twitter last night of that?
Yep.
It was
defensive possession.
Their ability to close out shooters, stay with them, rotate to the next man, recover backside. Like, they are on a string. They are moving at the same speed at the same time. They're moving with the ball. They're jumping with the pass. It's like a unified defensive unit, not one guy rotating and recovering, and then the other guy's a half second behind, and the other guy. That's how you get beat, right? Swing, swing, swing.
When Will talks about we've got great rhythm, we've got great cohesion. I mean, he's talking about, you know, guys in the locker room too, but he also talks. I mean, it's also, you know, shows on the court with possessions like that.
Yeah, I mean, they're defensive. Some of their defensive possessions are like artistically beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, go back and watch them. They're fun to watch. So I think that's the first general trend, is how good defensively in the half court and the full court this team can be. Let's talk offensively. I think the general trend through four games is that offensively, and this ties into some of the runs and spurtability that they've had, they've been inconsistent offensively, and they're maybe not as polished and smooth and consistent as past offenses, which were much more isolation-based. This is much more of a rhythm-based offense. But they can be explosive when they're clicking, right? Like, they're not always running at 90 or 100, but when they hit that top gear, like, they can go.
And it seems like it's going to be a pretty balanced scoring sheet on any given night. You know, Darius...
Hold on.
Night,
start over. Start that sentence over again. Bring a little energy now. I know you're not feeling well, but we have to... Like LSU's offense, you've been a little inconsistent. Let's step it up. Let's give it...
Sorry. The scoring sheet has been pretty balanced throughout the season.
Yes.
So it's not just... You know, I think the number one thing that I love most about this team through the first couple weeks of the season is that they've proven that any of the guys in that eight-man rotation can be the star on any given night. It's not like last year where, you know, Cam Thomas is always going to get you the bulk of your points, or Tremont is always going to be counted on. This group has eight guys that can win you a game on any given night, and I think that's a recipe for something special as we move forward. And I also think that's a big reason why the chemistry is so high, is because everyone's, you know, having fun and contributing.
Yeah, the numbers are a little skewed right now just because you've had a lot of guys playing a lot of minutes. Like right now, Jarrell Colbert has 9 minutes per game, only in two games. Like, he's not going to play 9 minutes a game. Parker Edwards got some extended run last night. Like, you've had some blowouts where you've kind of gone to your bench and not done your normal rotations. Like Darius Days right now is averaging 27.3 minutes a game. That's going to go up, right?
Yeah.
But with that said, you have basically four guys averaging double figures with Days, Easton off the bench, Efton Reed's at 9.8 points per game, rounded up to 10. Gaines is at 9.5, rounded up to 10. You have Murray, who's at 8.3. You have Pinson, who's at 7.8. You have Fudge at 6.5. Like, you have eight guys every game that are giving you between 6 and 20 points a game. That's going to add up to a lot of offense, and that's a really a really balanced approach. Now,
Third double-double of the season last night for Tari through games in?
Yeah, for that guy to be coming off the bench, I mean, just imagine, like, being the starter that's been going for 4 or 5 minutes, then all of a sudden...
When it reverse, Terry!
Terry comes in. Tari Easton.
Eight of 13 from the field, 19 and 14, two steals and three blocks. Pretty much, you know, did a little bit of everything last
night. When it reverse, Terry!
Love Tari Easton. Not Terry Easton, as he was referred to in the press conference last night. But that will be his soundbite, by the way. And by the way, as we're on the soundbite train... Oh, man, I don't think I balanced this one out yet. Yeah, I didn't balance this one out yet, but... In case we ever talk about Brandon Murray.
Murray!
That's the name.
Got that one for fans of the Dan Lebatard show, like myself. And then, anytime we talk about Eric Gaines.
The real one.
The real one.
The real one, as we learned on the broadcast last night, or if you follow him on social media, you knew that already. Now, I love that you love the balance. And I love that you love the balance of the team. Credit me with an assist there for the mute on the microphone. It probably came through on my mic. Not to be trifled with. Good communication. Yeah. We're getting stronger, just like LSU. Like, we didn't start as good as we wanted to, but we're getting better. While you love the balance, I love what we've seen from Darius Days as a primary focal point of the offense. And if you go back to some of the stuff we talked about in the preseason, it was, can Days be the dominant lead dog, right? Can he be the primary weapon in an offense? That's what we wanted to see through the first couple of games. He's... beyond shown that, right? Like, he's been electric, he's been dynamic, he's been consistent. Even last night in the game, where I think he said after the game it wasn't his night, still had 14 and 10. Like, when you can have 14 and 10 on your off night, it's a really good sign of things to come.
He will always be Darius Trays, but I've been impressed with Darius's ability to also put the ball on the floor and establish a mid-range game too. Couple of nice moves last night when his shot wasn't falling, and some nice moves in the prior contest too.
One of the things that stood out last night was, again, his shot wasn't falling. He shot 61%, 62% from the three, the first three games. That's not sustainable. He's going to be around 40 by the time the season's over. But last night when the shot wasn't falling, remember what I said, like, who's the guy that's going to be the guy that, like, if I put a guy on Darius Days, who would you put on him?
Mwani.
I put the other team's Mwani on him, right? And so last night McNeese tried to do that. They put a smaller guy on him. Darius just put his head down, bullied him to the rim. They ran that Spain play that LSU likes to run with their when they get a mismatch, they'll call the set called Spain. And essentially what it is they'll swing the reverse ball to the top. Whoever reversed the ball cuts through the paint and tries to get a piece of the top guy's defender to create a little leverage, and then they'll attack. Days just put the ball on the floor, bullied the guy to the block, got to the rim, laid it up. So he's been able to score in a number of ways. And I have some numbers to back that up. First, I want to do this stat from Todd Politz to talk about his incredible shooting. This stat blows my mind. Todd put this out after, I believe, the Liberty game. There are two players in LSU basketball history who have shot 50% from the field in their career, with more than 50% of their field goal attempts being three-pointers. One is Justin Anderson, who played from 1991 to 92. He took 145 career shots, 92 were threes. He shot 50.3% from field. That's really good. The other is Darius Days, who from 2018 to 2021 has taken 670 shots, so five times more. He's made attempted 355 threes, and he shot 50.7% from the field. So to shoot 50.7% from the field while over half your shots are threes means two things. You're making a lot of your threes, and you're incredibly efficient at your twos. And Darius is both of those things. He always has been. But his offense has changed a little bit this year. I've referenced the off-the-dribble stats before. A couple that stood out to me. What was his primary way of last year? What were the two ways that Darius scored the most?
Pick-and-pop three.
So spot-up three.
And would you say putback?
Putbacks.
Yeah.
Offensive putbacks.
All right, that's, see, I'm listening.
Yeah, there
I'm
you
listening.
Go. Good. You're learning. Good job. Yeah. Look, we're getting better, man. This is one of those spurts. We're having a two-minute spurt here. I'm excited. he's always been an offensive rebound monster. That was his first role with LSU. Get offensive rebounds. Even before he was making threes, go get offensive rebounds. This year, he's actually not getting that many offensive rebounds. He just hadn't had to. Last year, this is him in a more evolved role, right? As a more primary weapon, not even his first couple years. He got 16.8% of his points off of putbacks last year. This year, that's down to 6.5%. And the biggest difference is 14.5% of his points this year are coming in isolation, which I don't even have the numbers from last year. Let me see if I got him here on Synergy. It's way up. He never isolated last year. Yeah, this is this year's 14.5% of the time he is working in isolation. And filibuster for me after you take that sip of your drink so I can pull up last year's stats.
Did you see him kiss the rim once he made that free throw?
I did see that. What did you think of it?
That just shows a little bit of frustration, saying thank you to the basketball gods for finally giving me the bucket that I've been waiting for all game.
So I think that was part of it. He always, after his free throws, blows the kiss, right?
Really?
Yeah, he's always done it, but it's usually more subtle.
Got it.
A more subtle blowing the kiss.
So had a little bit more oomph to it.
And I don't know why he does it, but I'm going to ask him because it's probably interesting. So what did I say? 14.5% isolation this year, 2.2% last year. He had 3 points in isolation last year. He's already got 9 this year. So that his game has changed. His game has evolved. So I love that there is a balance to this team. I wasn't worried about that coming into the season. I thought they would have some balance. I was worried if they'd have a true primary scorer. And I think they have two for sure. I think Days and Tari have both proven themselves as guys that can go get buckets, right? I'd be interested to see Pinson develop if offensively as a scorer he can tap back into what he originally was. Like the scouting report on Pinson coming into the season was great scorer, can he be a true point guard? I mean, this year he's been a great very good true point guard.
He had another one of those games where he didn't exactly let up the scoring sheet, but you know, 8 assists. He always seems to be around that 7-8 assist mark.
Eight in the first game.
Boards,
yep.
A steal. So he finds ways to be impactful when, you know, he's not, you know, racking in the points.
Eight assists, 7 assists, 3 assists, and then 7 assists. And his assist rate right now is 38.4, which is top 50 in the country amongst point guards. And that's splitting a lot of the ball handling duties with Gaines too. So that's encouraging to see. Will had a good quote about playing 2 point guards together.
I was just going to say that.
Okay.
He kind of talked to me. He was like, if I could play another one too, I would.
Well, he smirked at the question.
Yeah.
Because you remember last year, Cobble asked him a question about, like, you don't have any point guards.
Exactly.
He's like, what do you mean I don't have any point guards?
First press conference of the season, Cobble walked in and he said, we got plenty of point guards.
Plenty of guards this year, Cobble. Yeah, because Cobble said, you don't really have any guards. And he was like, what are you talking about? We have Javonte Smart and Cam Thomas. There's two NBA players. And so, again, last night he was asked about getting to play 2 point guards together this year as if that's like a new thing. And it's not a new thing for Will Wade. Let me pull this soundbite up.
Oh, I love playing 2 point guards together. I love doing that. I did it my whole time. Both years at VCU, I played 2 point guards. Our first year here, if you remember, we had 3 point guards out there at the same time. We played Tremont, Skyler, and Javonte together. We started all three of those guys. The more ball handlers you can have on the court, the better. You can't have enough of them. So I wish I had another one to put out there, and I put them out there. I love playing like that.
Yeah, so he loves getting as many guards. It's like, I think Will Wade's dream lineup is like 3 point guards and 2 just monsters on the glass because one problem that LSU's had in the past, and it's been a little bit of a problem this year, not much, is getting killed on the glass. Last year that happened. When they struggled, they would get killed on the glass. They were 312th last year in defensive rebounding percentage. Teams got 32.1% of their misses. This year they're a little bit better. It's a 28.1%. They're kind of middle of the pack. Still a great offensive rebounding team. Defensive rebounding's been up and down, and they've been out-rebounded. I think they got out-rebounded against Liberty. They got out-rebounded, and then last night, I'm guessing they out-rebounded McNeese. I don't have the stats in front of me here. I'll pull them up right here. Let's see. They had 44 rebounds, did McNeese, and LSU had 47. So no, 50. So they did out-rebound them, but they haven't been dominant on the glass so far. So that's not a big picture thing to keep an eye on. I think that's more of a small picture thing to keep an eye on. Anything else before we get to the Darius Days interview? We didn't take any questions today, so won't any other sound bites that I need to drop? Let me scroll through and see if
he had a good one on Eric Gaines talking about how elite he is defensively and how he feels like he hasn't really scratched the surface of where he could be in terms of his potential as a player.
I mean, both. I mean, he gives great effort defensively, and then, I mean, you can give great effort defensively and still not be any good. You've got to have quick twitch. You got to have instincts like he has. I mean, he's got unbelievable quick twitch. He's a great mover. He's got extreme speed, and so you combine all that with playing hard, and you have an elite defender, which is what he is. And his offense is continuing to come along. He's improving. He's improving and getting better offensively. He's just going to keep getting better as he keeps working and keeps moving forward this season. You know, he's nowhere near the player that he can be. He's going to be a great, great player, and I think it's going to be sooner rather than later this season. We believe in him. He's really, really good.
Further we get into the season, the more impressed I get with Eric Gaines. It feels like his impact to this team can't really be put into numbers. 10 points, 6 assists, 2 steals. He really does it all. Elite defensively. Shows you what he can do offensively too. Last night with his up and under, incredibly athletic. It's been huge for the Tigers through 4 games and should only get better. And like Will just said, he seems to only be touching the surface as to where he thinks he can be as a player.
Is it safe to say that he's
the real one?
The real one.
What I love about Gaines, so when Adam Miller went down, everyone sort of panicked and wondered, like, oh man, can they sustain this? And when I'd go do radio spots, it was like, who's going to step up and sort of bridge the gap between Adam Miller? And the initial answer that I would give people was
Murray.
That's the name.
Now it's shifted
to real one.
It's shifted to Gaines, because that's probably annoying for the listener, but it's fun for me.
He's like
Sorry.
A cat out there, as Will Wade would say.
I think he's picked up the slack, and I'm working on getting the lineup data. I want to see the lineup data when Pinson and Gaines play together, because that's been a common combination. When Murray's not out there, that's basically what they do at the two spot. And I don't really know what else you do at that two spot. Between Murray, like, Pinson's basically your backup two, and Gaines goes to the one. You can kind of play them together. You can play Gaines and Murray together. You can play Gaines and Pinson together. You can play Murray and Pinson together. That's basically your backcourt. I don't really know who you go to after that. You could play Mawani as a quasi two if you wanted to, with Days out there to get some shooting. Fudge could be out there as kind of your big three, but you'd still want some shooting around that. Like, that's basically your three backcourt options, which is tough. That's, as Will said when he was talking about point guards, he's used to having more depth in the backcourt. But your front court is so good and so dynamic that if those guys can stay healthy and consistent, I think you're going to be okay there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was Monday night. Coach talked about how Eric's defensive energy and intensity pretty much was the difference maker in that game.
He's just so electric too. Like, yeah. This team is you love having an electric element to your team. Tremont Waters was pure electricity. Now, he was the focal point of your team and the star, but he made the games fun, right? And there's something just fun about a 6'2" cat-like point guard that can get a steal at any time. They can go down and throw a windmill dunk down. They can do the up and under like he did last night. I know there's a lot of fans of Eric Gaines listening right now. He's the exciting part is, like Will said, he hasn't touched the surface. He hasn't scratched the surface, to use the cat analogy. Like, he's got a lot of potential left to capitalize on.
Yeah. Have you noticed anything on the offensive side this year that maybe he's improved on?
I mean, he's shooting better. He's already made 3 3 pointers this year. Last year, I think he made 5 the whole season. Does that sound right? Like, he was inconsistent. Yeah, he was 5 of 29 all last season. He's 3 of 8 so far this year. So he's taking good shots. I mean, he's 13 of 14 at the free throw line. Like, he's been automatic at the free throw line. Last year he was 72%, which is good, but he's 93% right now. He's facilitating a little bit more. He's turning it over less. They're still higher than you'd want them to be, but the goal is to have 10 or less turnovers every game for the team, and he's had one game with 4, but he's had one game with 3, but in that game he had 5 assists. Like, he's had a 6-1 assist to turnover against McNeese. He had a 7-2 against UL Monroe. There's been some good stuff out of him.
Yeah,
so
if there's one player that,
go ahead,
it feels like their impact goes way beyond the stat sheet. It feels like it's Eric Gaines.
The other thing is, unlike his nickname, which I just got rid of,
EG, also known as the real one.
Those are his social follows, right? If y'all want to go give him a follow. Even though they call him
the real one,
he's playing off of 2 feet.
Yep.
See what I did there?
Yep.
The real one versus one. Two. Yep. He's playing off 2 feet. That's the biggest thing. I've said this before. I'm being repetitive, and we'll wrap up here and get to Darius Days. But last year, Gaines played off 1 foot a lot. Playing off 1 foot leaves you vulnerable to offensive fouls, which is an issue for this team that they've got to clean up, illegal screens, all that stuff. It puts you in a bind. You jump up in the air. You don't have anywhere to throw the ball. You force a pass. You turn it over. He's playing off 2 feet this year. He'll drive, and he'll take that one step, and then instead of jumping, he plants the other. And then he pivots, and he finds something to throw to. I don't have, like, he's only committing 2.7 fouls per game, so offensive fouls aren't an issue for him. Last year, he was committing 5 fouls per 40 minutes. This year, it's at 2.7. So I would bet a lot of those are offensive fouls that he's gotten rid of out of his game. That's just an assumption based on the stats and the observation. I don't have the exact data to back that up. But he's playing under control. He's making better decisions. And when Pinson and him are out there, you've got two credible playmaking point guards that can create offense for anybody at any time.
Just going through Twitter right now. I saw your Efton Threed tweet.
That was Efton Threed. We're adding that to the various Trey's, what would you call that? Catalog.
Taglines.
Catalog, yeah. of taglines. That's going in there. So Efton Threed has been adopted.
How about that? A little triple for Efton Reed.
Oh, yeah. He's got a couple now, right? He hit another one last night, didn't he?
See. There were a couple plays in that.
He can step out and shoot it,
man. Liberty game? That was Liberty, right?
Efton Reed is, he's only 1-3 on the season from the 3-point line, but he can step out and knock it down from three. There's no question about it. Was he shooting at the line?
Three
free throw attempts for Efton Reed this season.
Three?
Slow. Yeah, 2 of 3 from the line, according to KenPom.
Notes here, too, that coast-to-coast drive from Pinson before the half was huge.
Against Liberty?
I felt like that was a huge
against play. Against back, yeah, in the Liberty game. Yeah. That goes back to the story, fast and physical. They are at their best when they're playing fast and physical, not when the game is slowed down.
And then they came out of the break on a 9-0 run and then really set the tone.
Liberty wanted to slow that game down, and yeah, LSU didn't let them. So there's still another level for this team to get to, but the things that we've seen so far are encouraging. Excited about where they're going.
Belmont
as,
up next.
As Will said, big game up next. The next 4 games, well, I don't have the. Let me see if I can pull up the bracket. Why don't you buy some time for me while I pull up the bracket? Because Belmont's gonna be a big one for LSU.
Okay.
At home Monday 7 p.m. Is that a 7 p.m. game?
Let me see.
You pull it up. Now we're both trying to. All right, I'll buy time for you, and then you buy time for me. Belmont's a good team though. Belmont, as Kent said, like they're an automatic 20 wins every year. Last year they were 26-4.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock Monday, yeah, in the PMAC. Wonder if we'll have a happy hour in Canes again, probably. I think Dave, yeah, is lining up all that. Stay tuned on Twitter for all the promotions, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be free. I think it's going to be free Canes for the first 300 students, and then probably another happy hour. On me!
That's my, yes, that's I
my,
love that.
That's my Will Wade impression.
Yeah.
Belmont, like, listen to this. 26-4 last year, 26-7 the year before, 27-6 the year before, 24-9, 23-7, 20-12, 22-11, 26-10, 26-7. Like, that's hard to do, man. Like, I don't care what conference you're in, that's really hard to do. They've been in a tournament a ton. Rick Bird was there for forever. Casey Alexander has been there the last couple years and done a good job of picking up where they left off. They just beat Furman in overtime. Belmont's 65th in KenPom. They play fast on offense. They play slow on defense like LSU. Like, it's going to be stylistically a pretty similar matchup. Like, let's go ahead and pull up the matchup here from KenPom and see like what some of the interesting things are matchup wise. Like, neither team has been great about getting to the free throw line, so that'll be interesting to watch. Now Belmont's defensively doesn't let anybody get to the free throw line. They're 6th in free throw rate defensively, so that's not been a strength for LSU. That could be an issue. But both teams are extremely efficient offensively. LSU is the better defense so far this season. Turnovers, Belmont is a little turnover prone. They're not great, and LSU's forcing a ton of turnovers, so that's a good sign. Rebounding,
33-15 points off turnovers last night.
Who was that, LSU?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're getting a ton of free offense that way. So Belmont's going to be a good team. They got a slew of experienced players, and they're always really tough. What was I supposed to be looking up while you bought me time? Something about the schedule. No, that was you that was looking up the schedule. It was 7 p.m.
I was looking up the time.
Oh, we're fading here, yeah, as we're Oh, I was going to look up the bracket for Thanksgiving week. So buy me some time here for a second.
Okay. Parker Edwards, the triple.
There you go. Yes. Do a Parker Edwards 30 seconds while I look up the schedule for the holiday Hoopsgiving.
I don't know if there's anything that gets the PMAC louder than a Parker Edwards triple, an and one. He actually had a chance at a second one on the following possession for back-to-back threes. And I think if he hit that one, the roof might have caved in because he rimmed out. But got another triple.
I didn't get that. Could you try again?
Is that you?
Siri on my... On my
sorry, I'm still not sure about that.
Interrupted by Siri, who's I got my computer hooked up to the Rodecaster, obviously, and he wasn't very happy with Harrison's. I was wrong. It's not the holiday Hoopsgiving. LSU and Penn State are playing at the that's the Niceville event, which is the Emerald Coast Classic. So let's look up Emerald Coast Classic. You been to Destin recently? Are you a Destin guy?
No, I've not.
Have you ever been to Destin?
Nope, never.
You're a New Jersey guy. Yeah, so Destin is like the bougie version of the beach. Like for if you're in Baton Rouge, you go to like Orange Beach, Gulf Shores, which is more like the blue collar, like working man beach. Although Orange Beach is not like blue collar. Like Gulf Shores is more blue collar. Orange Beach is a little bit nicer. Destin is like the bougie 30A. Have you seen the 30A stickers around?
I have not. I'm just excited to see Kent wearing some, you know, Hawaiian shirts and going to the beach.
Okay, here we go. Updated from the Emerald Coast Classic. So LSU Texas State was kind of like a prelude to that. Liberty at LSU was a prelude to that. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Oh, this is just a schedule for the week. They did like a actual notebook. Let me see if I can find a bracket. This is such bad podcasting. Holy cow. let's see. Second round games. Penn State versus LSU, Oregon State versus Wake Forest. The Penn State LSU winner plays the Oregon State Wake Forest winner. Let's go back and see how good Wake Forest and Oregon State are. LSU. Which one do you want me to look up first?
Which one?
Wake Forest. See how Wake Forest is. 104th in KenPom, not bad. And they play Oregon State, who's 92nd in KenPom and has struggled this year. 1-3 off to the season. So probably that Penn State game is going to be the bigger one for LSU. Who else is in the in this one? That's kind of the four premier teams, and that's the championship. The championship round is Penn State LSU winner versus Oregon State Wake Forest winner. So two winnable games, but two tougher games for LSU. Step up in competition, and then obviously Belmont on Monday. It's going to be a big week before we get back together.
Before we go, you got to tell the listeners about how fast Will Wade's 40 time is.
Is that the lead of my story?
From your column, yeah.
Okay, so after the Liberty game, I was standing on the court, and Will was doing his post-game interview with TV on the far side of the court, and I was standing by the bench. I was talking to one of the managers. We're talking about whatever. I think I asked him, like, who's charting the deflections this year, because I wanted to see something about deflections. All of a sudden, I look up, and Will's coming by. And he's sprinting, man, like full speed ahead. Now, I've run with Will before. It's a casual, like, 8:30-mile pace, right? Like, a good, hearty jog, but you're not going. He was like, this is like 4-minute mile
speed.
Was
this just pure excitement just to get back to the locker room?
It was pure excitement after that game. And so that's why I was like, man, Will's like so positive. And
I wish we could have GIF that.
And then that was just for my brain only. It's a GIF in my head. He's so positive, and the press conference was super positive. He was fired up, and the next day... Bothered Bill shows up ready to go. So look, I love that. I love that about him. I love that. That's a sign of greatness, and I'm excited for this team. All right, we've waffled too much. I'm really not going to go back and clean up a whole lot of that because I just don't feel like doing it. I just want to get this episode out to our listeners. But I am excited that we are now going to be able to throw it to my interview with Darius Days. The interview came before the season, so it's not completely up to date, but you do get kind of an insight into how hard he worked this offseason. So I don't have a transition audio bit here. So how do we want to get out of here? Any suggestions?
Harrison,
any requests?
Let's see.
Is boot up the request? I can do that. I mean, anything
any
you
those,
want.
Any of those sounds?
Any of the sounds that we've played, I can use as a transition.
Give me a the real one.
The real one.
And let's do, I take my orders from Kent.
Oh, it's going to take me a second, but I'll get there. No, it's okay.
I take my orders from Kent.
And now I'll throw it to Darius Days. All right, it's good to catch up with Darius Days, LSU senior basketball player.
Yes, sir.
Days, good to see you, man.
I see you.
All right, I want to start with a conversation that we had in the spring. Very quick conversation. You may not even remember it.
Okay.
But I saw you over in the basketball facility, and at that time you were deciding what you wanted to do for this season coming up.
Right.
And you had a decision to make. And at that point you were undecided. You were, you know, you understood the options you had in front of you, what it would mean to come back, what it would mean to test the waters. And so I'm curious, from that time till now, obviously you've made a very important decision to come back. Right. What went into that decision to come back to LSU?
Well, that's a great question. You know, going home, talking to my parents, sitting down with my parents and understanding the possibilities of everything. And just going through the workouts, understanding everything that was going on with the workouts, going to the combine and just, you know, seeing everything. And then, I sat down with Coach Wade. You know, we talked. We had a really pretty long talk and was like, you know, if you come back, you know, everything else is going to be, you know, better. You know, we have good guys. You know, we always have good guys around. But, you know, it's just a different feel this year. You know, I came back, talked to the guys, you know, and everything was everything. And I really enjoyed the guys. So, you know, I made a decision to come back.
I know one of the things that you had to consider was, you know, you came in with this group of guys, Emmett and, you know, Tremont was around when you were mm-hmm. when you were freshman. Skyler. I mean, all these guys that came in that class that you were a part of that was so special with all that talent that came in. Javante, those are the guys that you came in with, right? And so they've all moved on. And so I know it had to probably tear at you a little bit, right, to see them at the next level and knowing that you want to get there, but also knowing that, like, you have your own path and your own journey to follow. So how did you sort of work through that process?
Right, you're right. You know, I did come in with those guys. You know, it felt like, you know, years ago, you know, a long time ago, but it was just 4 years ago. But, you know, coming in with those guys, it taught me a lot. You know, being around those guys, you know, Nazi, Emmett, Javante, Skylar, Tremont. But, you know, like you say, you know, everybody has their different path. You know, mine's just taking 4 years. Everybody else taking shorter. But, you know, I feel like, you know, it's going to be a different outcome this year. You know, I'm being more mature. You know, I'm be ready to go. You know, everything that the guys told me in the draft process, you know, I'm doing. I'm, you know, trying to be a leader for these young guys. So, you know, being able to come back, you know, experience one more year at LSU, you know, I'm happy to be here. So, you know, nothing has really took for granted. I love this university.
You said it's felt like a long time, and it really has. Like, yeah. When you think about all the stuff that you've been through in your career, COVID and your freshman year making the tournament but will not be in there, and it's right. Just a crazy time, and then your junior year, and now obviously setting up for this year. When you reflect on your time that you've been here so far, does it feel like it's flown by, or does it feel like it's taken a while?
It definitely feels like it's flown by.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like yesterday, like I was coming on my visit. You know, 2017, they were playing Auburn here. Like, you know, they just play Auburn. It's crazy. But they was playing Auburn. I came on my visit. You know, me and Emma was together. Javante was here. Nazi wasn't here. And, you know, we was just discussing and talking, like, you know, what if we do come to school at LSU? What would it be like? And, you know, we made a decision. All of us made a decision to come to LSU. You know, that first year, you know, it was a great and magical season. You know, us young guys coming in, you know, gelling with the older guys. You know, we had a great season. You know, Sweet 16, regular season SEC champions. And, you know, that's what I feel like, you know, the culture is still here. You know, winning culture is still here. And we're just trying to win this year, you know, and make the best of it. You know, I'm trying to go out with a bang.
Yeah, you've been a big part of that winning culture, right? Definitely. When you think back to 3 years, I think you guys have won more SEC games than anybody
right.
in that three-year span. And you've been a big part of that. I want to go back to the beginning, though, mm-hmm. before LSU, back to the hometown.
All right.
Tell us about where you're from, because I was messing with Will a little bit, trying to get some questions. So he told me to ask you one question about growing up on a farm. So I want
right,
to.
I know
how Will can be. Coach Wade can kind of steer me in a direction.
It's crazy that you say that. Like when he first, you know, came to see me, and like, they were able to come out. Where I'm from, you know, it's a really small town. So like, you know, he had to fly in a place called Williston, Florida. No one probably wouldn't really know where it is. But like, they had to clear the runway. It was like, you know, turkeys going across the runway. So, you know, they had to, you know, go and do that. So, you know, going back to the beginning, I actually don't actually live on a farm, but I do have farm animals.
Okay.
You know, I have a couple horses. You know, I used to have chickens and a couple pigs.
Okay.
But you know, it's not necessarily a farm, but some people would say it's a farm. You know, and it's only 745 people there where
yeah.
I'm from.
What's the name of the town?
Raleigh, Florida.
Yeah.
And most of the people are my cousins anyway. So, you know, that goes to a big part when we go to University of Florida. We play against them, you know. I haven't had the most success there, but, you know, this year's going to be a different story. But, you know, my family and friends comes out to the University of Florida game. So, you know, it's jitters and, you know, the place is electric. So, you know, I'd be very anxious when I go there. So,
how far from Gainesville is Raleigh?
Depends who's driving. If my dad's driving, it's quick, 22 minutes, 23 minutes. If I'm driving, you know, I like to take my time, relax. It depends if I'm going somewhere. It'd take at least 25 to 30 minutes. But, you know, it's really close.
Born and raised there?
Most definitely.
So growing up there in a small town like that, tell me about your introduction to basketball, how you fell in love with the sport.
Funny thing you said that. I'm really from like a baseball kind of football, you know, area.
Yeah.
So, you know, playing basketball wasn't like one of the really biggest things to do in my area. So like, you know, growing up, you know, my older brother, Anthony, was a real Kobe Bryant, real big Kobe Bryant fan. So like him, like, you know, telling me about Kobe and, you know, telling me about the things that he's done me growing up. And plus it's like almost a 10-year age difference between me and my oldest brother. So like, you know, I'm in second grade and he's a senior in high school. So like, you know, him, you know, growing up and telling me about Kobe is just a, you know, a different feel than me growing up. I was a kind of big kid. So, you know, everybody wanted me to play football. So, you know, somebody came and watched me play in middle school and they liked the way I played. So like they asked me to come try out for their team. And, you know, I went and tried out for their team my seventh grade year. And like, you know, I just fell in love with basketball. You know, I quit football altogether and I just wanted to, you know, just play basketball. So, you know, ever since then, you know, I've just been in love with the game of basketball, and that's all I want to do.
So I can relate to that because I grew up here, and it's football and baseball here. And,
right.
But I fell in love with basketball, and I don't know, something about falling in love with that sport that's maybe not everyone else's main sport gives exactly. You that deep connection to. Did you feel that? Did you feel like you had that bond with the sport?
Definitely. I definitely feel like I had the bond with the sport. Just every day going outside, you know, early in the morning on the weekends. Like if I didn't have nothing to do on the weekends, I'll go outside. Like I'm a very early riser.
Yeah.
So like I'll wake up around like 7:30 and just be outside with my ball dribbling and shooting.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I was a heavier guy. So like, you know, that helps me. I helped me lose a lot of weight as well.
Yeah.
So I slimmed down, you know, people were surprised. You know, it felt like, you know, I went away for a year and came back and everybody was like, wow, where are your weight went? And it was really crazy. So like, you know, that helped me in the long run as well. And, you know, just, you know, being around basketball just helped me, you know, become the person I am today.
Where's like, when you look back on your childhood, like your favorite court, your favorite hoop, like was it the one at your house, like the gym down the road at the school? Where was like your safe spot for basketball?
When I was really, really young, the court at my house was like my safe haven. But like as I got older, you know, I needed the lines and stuff for the real free throw line, for the real 3-point line. It was like it was a church down the road. It was called, you know, Vision Church, and I used to just go there and use that court all the time. And like it was an outside court, so they didn't really, you know, matter too much. And then as I gotten older, you know, I kind of, you know, got away from being outside. You know, it was the local high school. I went to their gym. So other than that, that was about the only gyms I really liked.
When you think about the characteristics that make you different from the guys that you compete against, the guys that you play with, and then the things that were kind of embedded in you from your hometown.
Right.
What stands out? Is it a blue collar mentality? Is it the early rising? Like what would you get from your childhood and your hometown that defines who you are today?
Definitely playing hard. You know, the high school I went to my freshman year in high school, you know, we really, really, really known for playing hard and running and, you know, doing all the little things and diving on loose balls, diving in the crowd for loose balls. So like that helped me a lot throughout my, you know, college days and, you know, throughout my high school career. So, you know, going back to, you know, playing where I'm from in Williston, it's just, you know, playing hard, you know, doing what you're supposed to do, you know, on the court and off the court, you know, just showing respect to the guys, you know, that helped you get to where you are today. So, you know, most definitely blue collar, most definitely.
So growing up there just outside of Gainesville, as you start to develop and schools start paying attention to you and they're coming in to visit you for recruiting and talking to you, what about LSU? As Will Wade shows up and you come and watch the Auburn game in 2017, it's his first year. The program has not been in a good place the last couple of years. You're not winning a bunch of games. But when you came in, what did you see? That what vision did you have?
To be honest with you, I was sold on Louisville early. Like that was my first was my first visit ever. So I was pretty sold on Louisville. And then I came here for my second visit. Like the weekend before my birthday, I was going to commit on my birthday.
Yeah.
And then, before that, I had went to North Carolina. So I was pretty sold on Louisville. But, you know, when I came here, it kind of reminded me of Gainesville. It's actually just like Gainesville. Like, you know, college town, the only thing in the town, basically the only thing in the area. So, like, you know, it kind of reminded me of home. Great people, great food. I'm really big on food. I used to be really, really big on food. You know, it's great food down here, great people, great energy. You know, the women are great too. You know, great, you know, all that's great. And it's just, I just fell in love with the university. You know, the staff was great. You know, yeah. I was, you know, Coach Hyrus here.
Yeah.
You know, Taz is cool. You know, Coach BA is cool. So, you know, being able to be around those guys just taught me a lot. You know, understanding as a 17-year-old, 18-year-old, you know, in high school, my senior year, and coming in as a freshman, you know, it taught me a lot and, you know, brought me to the man I am today.
You said you used to be really into food.
Yeah.
What
now,
happened?
Now I'm on a diet from now on until, you know, I'm done playing basketball. Or, you know, it might, you know, stretch out past while I'm playing basketball.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I got to stay a consistent weight.
Yeah.
You know, I can't really eat the things I've been eating these past 3 years I've been here. You know, I got to stay slim and trim. You know, I got to play way more minutes than I've played
the past
3 years. So, you know, and I got to lead these guys. So
what have you been eating the last 3 years?
Like everything.
What do you miss?
Ribs. definitely ribs. You know, that's, you know, me and Trenton used to always, you know, go, you know, get food together.
Yeah.
You know, that was my food partner. You know, we'll go to Chick-fil-A in the morning for breakfast. Then we'll come back, go to the dining hall with Coach them. And then we'll go, you know, go to Red Robin or something and get burgers or something. Or go to BJ's and get, you know, I get a rack of ribs. Or we'll go to Walk-On's and I get some pasta or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, just eating great food. But, you know, I still eat the blackened chicken pasta from Walk-On's. But,
okay.
You know, I had to slow down on it. So
who pushed you toward the diet? Who said, hey, let's get our diet under – let's mm-hmm. narrow that down and get it as good as it can be so we can get our physique as good as it can be. And then what's the diet look like these days?
You know, to going to the combine and talking to the, you know, the teams and stuff, you know, it's basically, I looked better last year, but it wasn't to where I needed to be.
Yeah.
And so this year I've been eating a lot of grilled stuff.
Yeah.
You know, definitely a lot of tropical smoothie. I've been eating a lot of tropical smoothie lately. A lot of grilled Chick-fil-A sandwiches and the nuggets. I really like the nuggets. And, you know, I still eat the blackened chicken pasta on the weekends.
Yeah.
You know, I have time.
Yeah, you got to have a treat day every now and
exactly.
then.
Exactly.
Yep.
And then,
go ahead.
That's about it.
You know, you mentioned Taz. And I kind of look at, like, who would be the ideal person to coach Darius Days? Like, a guy that's going in his fourth year. He's a four-man. He can play outside. He can play inside. Rebounds well, and like Tasman Mitchell is the perfect guy in my head to definitely. Like be around to mentor you, to talk about the experience that he went through and share that with you. How much of an influence has he been on you?
He's definitely been a lot. You know, we had practice today and he was getting on to me about, you know, just being in the right position to rebound, you know, and being out of position to rebound. So basically the drill was like, you know, I'm facing him and somebody was on the backside and I gotta find him and, you know, and go box out and then catch the rebound. He was just showing me different techniques to do. And like sometimes he showed me some post moves on the block, you know, some things to get to my spots on the court to, you know, make the game easier for me. So he's played a, you know, a pretty big part in, you know, the transition from, you know, my third year to my fourth year.
Two questions for you. How much have you grown since you've been here?
Mm-hmm.
And what are your goals for this year?
You know, from my freshman year to now, you know, everybody can see that, you know, I've changed over the time I've been here. You know, from, you know, being on the court longer, not being in so much foul trouble because, you know, the first 2 years I used to be in foul trouble a lot. I used to almost foul out of almost every game. So, you know, being, you know, positive and good on the defensive end and, you know, sliding my feet and being able to stay on the court and, you know, better shot selection as well. You know, I kind of had a couple hiccups my sophomore year, you know, and just working harder. What was the second question?
Goals for this year.
Goals for this year. I want to be the SEC Player of the Year.
Love it.
I want to lead my team to a regular season SEC championship and lead my team to a SEC tournament championship. And as well, wherever we go in the NCAA tournament, you know, I want to have a, you know, winning season this year, you know, keep winning. You know, we're LSU is really known for winning in basketball, you know, the past couple of years. So, you know, keep the tradition going.
I'm just saying, if you go look at my Twitter feed from like 2 or 3 years ago, I said Darius Day, sneaky SEC Player of the Year candidate down the road, and it feels like that road is here. So I'm rooting for it. I want to ask you two more questions. One of them we'll use, and one of them we may set to the side. The first one would be NIL and how that's affected your life, and how maybe affected your decision to come back because it's brand new. You're kind of at the forefront of it. Mm-hmm. I know you've got specific deals lined up, and maybe other deals lined up down the road, and maybe. Don't speak as much to the specific deals themselves, right. But just the impact it's had on you, what you've learned, how exciting it is to kind of be at the forefront of that.
It's definitely exciting to be the first year, you know, for this to happen. You know, it's kind of, you know, giving you know, things back to players, giving the power kind of back to the players. And, you know, I'm really for it. You know, and some of the things, you know, I've done, you know, being with kids, you know, and, you know, almost want to do a, you know, a charity event with some kids and stuff like that. So, you know, it's I really enjoy it. And, you know, coming up, you know, during the season, I might do something with walk-ons, you know, I never know. You know, free black and chicken pasta for me, but who knows? But I really like that. But, you know, yeah, shout out to walk-ons, man. Shout out to walk-ons. But, yeah, you know, I'm really excited for it. You know, a lot of things, a lot of doors going to open for me and as my team throughout the season. So, you know, I'm really excited.
Love to see it. I'll end on this. You know, you talked about your goals for the season. And one thing that I've noticed this offseason from you is I'll be over in the weight room every now and then, and I'll see you in there by yourself running on the treadmill, getting after it on the weights. And I'm sure that's part of a program too, but it seems like you're putting in that extra work and extra motivated. Can you feel that? Do you feel that internal drive this year going on this season?
I definitely feel the internal drive. You know, I'm so close, you know, to where I want to be. And, you know, if I got to do extra work, so be it. And, you know, it's better to do the work now, and it was the summertime, and then it's October, and it's, you know, around this time next year to be, you know, laughing and saying, you know, I'm glad I did those little things to be in the position I am next year around this time. So, you know, I'm enjoying the ride, and it's going to be a fun ride this year.
It's been fun to watch you develop, and especially not just as a player, but as a guy walking around shaking everyone's hand in the building, kind of being the face of the program. Last one for you. You're wearing number 4. You wore it last year.
Definitely.
I want to know why you picked that number, but there's also a tradition now of guys here. Skyler wore 4. Keith Hornsby wore 4. We've had some real special guys in this program wear 4. Right. What does that number mean to you?
You know, I've been wearing 4 since I was in high school, but as, like you said, you know, Skyler wore 4, and then I waited a long, long time to wear 4 because, you know, I was a freshman. You know, Skyler was a junior, and then I was a sophomore and he was a senior, so I had to wait till my junior year to get it. So, you know, then I kind of had a little argument with Eric Gaines because he wanted it. And I was like, you know, I feel like it's an upperclassman number.
For sure.
And I feel like, you know, like you said, you know, a lot of special guys wore that number. So, you know, I don't want to keep that tradition going. I want to keep the 4, like, you know, 7 in football for, you know, LSU.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's a great tradition.
You earned that number, Tug Gaines. He's got to earn it.
Most
from
definitely.
You. All right, man. Darius Davis, appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Kent was practically coaching the team. I don't know if you saw him at Oxford, but he was practically, that's why we played so well.
People love a winner.